Hey, pull up a chair. We're so glad to have you join us here on the Back Porch Education Podcast. For the next half hour or so, we're going to talk about all things educational. It's a wonderful day to learn something. Glad you could join us.
So, conversation, seminar, is an art form. There are some sciencey things we can say about it. There are some things we can tie down and, you know, anchors we can put in. But yeah, it's a practiced thing, you were saying, Steve. So it's something you get better at over time.
Right.
And I would say I want to reach all the way back to the poem from last episode here, the Frost poem, To a Thinker, because I think that Frost is tangentially getting at something here when he criticizes the thinker who says, he says of the thinker, you're always repenting from one side to the other. You're working it back and forth, back and forth. You think that you're walking, you think you're making progress, but you're actually just rocking, right? And, you know, you keep using your brain and you keep doing it, trying to get somewhere. Well, fine. He doesn't say conversation. He says conversion. That is this flip-flopping, right? Has its place. And you are maybe getting somewhere, but don't use your mind too hard. But trust me, I'm a bard.
I'm a poet.
That is, he has it already. And I'm going to sort of misuse what Frost is after a little bit here and say the bard, the one who has been down that road or cultivated the sensibility and the art, is better at getting at the truth more directly.
Yeah. I get asked regularly. I'll just share the story. My experience with the formal seminar goes way back. I started this very early in my teaching experience, and I have seen an interesting phenomenon. I'll just share one occasion. So I used to do seminars at night, once a month. Anybody from the school, the 7th through 12th grade that wanted to come, if you wanted to come, you had to read the text. We sometimes had 30, 40 kids there. Sometimes they bring kids from other schools with them. Other times there's maybe only a half dozen of us. I didn't care.
Sure.
But there was a text, and if you'd read the text, you could get in the circle. And I promised them at the end, you'll get cookies and grape knee-high.
What's knee-high? A drink?
You know what a knee-high is? Yeah, it's a
fruit box? Well, drink box?
Come on, man. Have you not got the MASH TV show canon down? That's what Radar O'Reilly drank. It's grape knee-high. It's a grape soda.
Okay.
Fizzy, foul tasting grape thing.
Right.
And but I could get those cheap.
Yeah.
And so if you went through the 90-minute to 2-hour experience, you got the reward at the end. I think a lot of kids showed up for the cookies and BI.
Great.
But we get suckered into a great conversation along the way. And so at first, I mean, this is so weird, dude. You know, Louisiana is fairly colloquial. They know if you're from there or not. I'm not. Mm-hmm. From somewhere in wild, woolly Kansas. And so parents would kind of hang around to see, what's this dude doing?
What's going on around here?
What's going on here? Surely they're not just sitting around talking about a book for an hour. That's not my kid. But the parents would then express to me afterwards amazement that I would let them go wherever they wanted to go. That I honestly believe that the truth couldn't be defeated.
Yeah.
that if we talked and the kids wanted to take it over here or over there or try and take this text, you know, on up into to modern teen life in some way, that that fourth question, so what, could go anywhere. And they were like, you know, well, I feel you should have covered this or thus or this, you know, basically that I should have turned it into a sermon. And I'm like, I'm bound and determined not to do that.
You're like, I'm going to need some better cookies and more grape knee-high.
You know, no, the at that point, it's I'm going to need a hammer
right,
rather than cookies and grape knee-high. But my point is this, that that we this theme that we keep often coming back to is an art is learned in media res, in the middle of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully there's someone that's fairly good at doing it. When I started out with seminar, I was terrible at it. And so the kids suffered. You know, it's like having I've done this before, being a soccer coach and not knowing a thing about soccer.
Yeah, it's, golf coach. I was a golf coach. Sorry, everybody.
It's terrible. I was once a referee of a hockey game. And again, I'm from Kansas.
A lot of rinks out there?
No, not at all. And back in Maryland, where I was trying to ref a hockey game, there were moments when the kids just all stopped and turned to me, what are you doing? I don't know. Sorry, but I just have the whistle and I'm going to blow it from time to time because it surely you can't just whack each other like that.
Right.
But back to the seminar, there needs to be some experienced person. It's better if there's a coach.
A bard.
A bard who from time to time says, not like, you know, guides, but doesn't take over. And mm-hmm. and it's, you know, the best apprenticeships are when the guy, the plumber, stands back and says, okay, kid, you fix it. And just before he breaks the pipe and floods the bathroom, he goes, whoa. Not like that, like this. You're turning it the wrong way, you know, or whatever. But he's willing to let the kid get dirty, knowing that only as he's turning it the wrong way and it's not going well and he stops him before there's a catastrophe, does he, oh, not like that. I'm going the wrong way. I got to do it like this. And so, you know, I get asked all the time, what book helped you learn how to do seminar? And there just isn't one. Maybe Plato. Okay. The Republic. There. Go read. But what you see in Plato is.
So you better talk about it with somebody.
Yeah. Find somebody and talk to them about teaching people to talk and you might learn something. So it isn't. The point is pretty simple. It isn't a formula. You got the four questions. You got the text. You got the read and the write and the think and the listen and all. Okay, but how you do seminar is an intuitive. I like bringing it back to the notion of bar. It's a poem that you're in the middle of, and the more you bang around in it, the more you go, well, that didn't work too well. Oh boy, I'm going to do that again because that was good. And I refuse to try and pull it down into an outline that I can hand people and go, here, just follow these steps. And you'll have a great seminar. What I can tell you is that if you follow these steps, you're going to probably have a lousy seminar because you'll be,
Exactly.
It's like the kid at the plate trying to hit the baseball. And all he can think about is where his elbows are supposed to be and head up and chin down and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then the ball's right by him. Oh,
yeah.
Oh, I didn't hit it. I was too busy thinking about hitting it. So
I'm reminded of a good old G.K. Chesterton, because you're talking about seminar, you're talking about lousy seminar. And Chesterton has a way of saying things, and I love this. Let's say that we know for sure that seminar is worth doing.
Yep.
Okay. Well, what Chesterton says is anything worth doing is worth doing poorly.
I would.
And, you know, he's right. Like, you're going to start doing seminars or, you know, maybe you've been doing them for 20 years. You're going to do a seminar and it's some of them just, man, they aren't what you think of when you are writing the movie that is your life, where every seminar was this amazing mountaintop experience.
There's some stinkers,
but
there's some stinkers.
That's okay. Yeah, definitely.
Well, I think it's time for us to take a break. And when we come back, try and wrap this up, maybe give a few more practical recommendations for how seminars conduct themselves. Hey, during this brief break, I wanted to encourage you to use the share buttons we have on our website in order to help us get folks tuned into the show. Our goal is to encourage as many educators, homeschoolers, NFL punters, and donut makers as we can with these podcasts. So help us get the word out. Share our Facebook page. Send folks a link to one of your favorite episodes. Do whatever you can to help us share this craziness with either your best friends or, if it's more appropriate, your worst enemies. We will love you all the more for sharing our love. Thanks. And now, back to the show. So, Jason, I want to go back for just a moment as we come out of the break and revisit the nervous parents standing around the outside of my Baton Rouge seminar. What I tried to do one time was invite them in.
Yeah, take a seat.
Hey, come in, you know, sit down, join in. And a couple of them were familiar with the text, so they could have legally done so. But I got things like, well, you know, I'll ruin it for my child. They don't want their dad sitting in the circle. But many of them voiced some level of fear. That they might not know what to say, or that they might say the wrong thing, or that, well, I've just never done anything like this before. And I talk to teachers on a regular basis. Well, let me ask you, having taught, what kind of fears does a seminar bring up in a teacher?
Well, I would think the extremes, right, are each of those are going to be scary. And so on one side, the fear would be, if I don't have a super rigid structure, kids are going to start saying stuff and I'm not going to know how to respond. And oh my goodness, this is going to fall apart and everyone's going to be upset. And this is going to, so that would be one side.
The things will fall apart, right?
Right. That we're not going to get anywhere. We're not going to do anything,
right?
Nothing tangible will come out of it. No notes will be taken. and then the other side would be that I'm going to try and not just have a totally open-ended conversation, but I'm going to try to direct us towards something and I'm going to squash it. Like the magic's going to go away because I tried to be too formulaic with, not necessarily too formulaic, but steering them too directly.
Yeah.
You know, I can think of at least one more fear, and that would be just the fear of, well, frankly, of parents. You know, what are you doing? What are you teaching my kid? Like, what? You guys all just sit around and talk. I'm paying good money for this, or you know, whatever.
Right. That's what's going to hit the dinner table, right? What you doing? It's classic. Oh, we just talked.
Huh?
So apparently Mr. Dolworth didn't have a lesson planned today. So I think if you get past some of those initial fears, the chaos thing is going to happen.
Definitely.
There's going to be times when it's just a bloody mess at the end of the hour, and I'm sorry, but there is benefit in that. Mm-hmm. Hey, let's not do that again. Right.
That's not what you're aiming for, but you can collect some good stuff out of
it. You can use it when it happens. When it happens, it's not bad. It's just unwanted. The other can happen. There are times when, for one reason or another, the muse is not upon the students, and so the teacher's got to kind of keep prompting and guiding and, okay, so this is more of a monologue than a dialogue. Mm-hmm. Sure. But when that sweet spot is hit, I find many teachers just, they think that that is, that there's a certain spell that you have to cast on the students. And if you don't say it in Latin just the right way, the spell will not be cast. And so I just, what I often hear is I don't know how to do it. And so, so let's wrap up this discussion with some practical, I have already said it's not a formula, but some suggestions from those who've done it for a while. There's really three acts to any seminar is how I look at it. The pre-seminar is personal. If the teacher is getting over their teacherness and coming to the seminar as a student or as a, I hesitate to use this term, but I mean it, peer, as a fellow human with the students, mm-hmm. then they need to be reading, marking, thinking privately. Right. They need to have engaged themselves with the text. Right. They don't have to have mastered the text, and God bless you if you think you've mastered Dante or, you know, de Tocqueville or something like that. That's why we choose the really big ones, because a simpler text, one would be more likely to feel like they had mastered it.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
The teacher needs to feel inadequate to the text, because that puts them in the right frame of mind for a seminar. And then the second act is...
Steve, can I ask you something real quick there? Have you ever gone to class and said, hey, guys, I didn't read, so I can't be in the inner circle this time?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Okay. I've done that one time, and it was very embarrassing for me, but it was a good seminar.
Well, so I tell my students at the get-go, right? I'm a couple weeks into school as we're recording this, and my seniors who I do seminar with... Yeah. Are already, I've told them, you know, get good at this, and Mr. Elliott fades away.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's usually somewhere between Thanksgiving and MLK Day. That's a couple of months worth of stretch there, but
sure.
Somewhere in that late second, early third grading period, there's that seminar when at the end they all look around and go, Elliot didn't say anything.
Nice.
And I'm just sitting over there, my arms crossed, my feet out in front of me, sitting back with a big smile on my face going, that was nice.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Good job. That's what we're trying to make them independent conversants.
Yeah. Not so just, I didn't mean to derail you.
No,
but,
no. But you can't get there as an unengaged automaton, okay class. Mm-hmm. Have seminar.
Right.
At the heart of a good seminar is a teacher as passionately engaged by the text and as inadequate to the text as the rest of them. And then that if you're really reading good texts, the actual seminar is mostly each of us honestly and in a safe way displaying our ignorance.
Right.
It's asking questions.
Honesty. Right?
Help me understand what he meant when he said, and mm-hmm. and we just start trying to figure it out. It's in some cases, I've almost imagined in my mind that we're all just around a big jigsaw puzzle on the table. It's the text.
Yep.
And we're all kind of, if you've ever done that as a family, rather than just sitting there by yourself, but had several people trying to put a puzzle together at once. That's really what a seminar is. And we wait as the one person tries to fit their piece. And when it sticks in place, we all, hey, yeah. Okay. So it's taking shape. And well, let me try and see if I can't get a piece. And it's a beautiful thing. It's group inquiry at its best, pushed along by questions. And a lot of what I coach students in and myself is the asking of great questions, not the content.
Yeah.
Stuff that you might find on a test kind of questions, but the ones that don't have a full satisfactory answer. Certainly not yes, no, but more rhetorical, we might say, where I'm trying to get them to ask questions that none of us can fully answer. The best question is the one right. that leads to another question. And that drives them, you know, if they're the math people of the world trying to solve for X, it drives them nuts. Because there is no answer mm-hmm. to X. There's just more questions. But then the third act. So reading, marketing, the personal engagement prior to the seminar is very important. In the seminar, honesty, group inquiry, asking the right questions. Careful when I say asking the right questions. Asking the right kinds of questions that are open-ended and spur conversation is important. And then The number one thing that makes seminar delightful to students is that this isn't all just an intellectual enterprise. I'm really getting stuff out of this. Connections are occurring. Mm-hmm.
That's your so what question, right?
Right. And so that's the third act, is applying the work to the lives involved.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Okay. You're a 17-year-old living here in America, and Plato's way back there, and he's so old, and he's so dead, and there was slavery and all this. But he made me think about my life in a way I've never thought about it before. And then,
right.
And then the teacher just goes, so what are you going to do with that?
Yeah.
And I think that obviously there's a lot of improvisation and adaptation. Every seminar doesn't look the same. In fact, rarely do they look the same.
Right.
I would note that this isn't just for kids anymore or ever.
Right.
Obviously, there is sort of an ideal that it's in a classroom and we're circled up and we all know that we're about to engage in it. But that coffee shop often has some round tables.
Yeah.
And it's no big thing for a few adults to show up having shared a text and now working through it.
Yeah,
I think the dinner table or at home should from time to time be a mention the word Harkness table. They actually make tables designed for seminars.
Really?
They're very expensive. You can Google Harkness table sometime. The last time I looked at it, it was like $13,000.
Wow.
But
that's a lot of beautiful books.
Yeah, right.
I could buy some friends for $13,000.
So, and just among friends, I mean, one of the ways Jason and I, we've never taught at the same school together, but we've been in the same community and mm-hmm. come together for, I call them shenanigans, but they're just less formal seminars. We know when we come that we're going to talk. And
we have a book.
So, well, sometimes there's a book and sometimes there's an idea and sometimes there's an activity. The last one I had was a bring your friend shenanigan. And the whole point was to just expose more people to this, because I really, again, sort of as a closing statement, believe, let's put it this way, this kind of activity has radically formed and changed my life.
Good.
And I covet it for other people.
Right.
It's not the stuffy, nerdy, gee, let me impress you with my, that's not what we've described here. Mm-mm. We've described honest human conversation. And it's the impetus behind our podcast name.
Yeah.
That we're just on the back porch rocking back and forth, not as the thinker, but
well, maybe
between two positions, maybe, but we're relaxed and having a chat that has some substance to it.
Yeah.
We are going somewhere.
Yeah.
And the thing that controls me is that I'm headed somewhere eternally. And the best definition I have for what to expect in heaven is an eternal divine conversation.
Yeah. Good stuff. Well, let me say this before we shut it down for today. To the teacher who is feeling like they want to try this, but very nervous about the whole situation. Remember, the Adler said doing this could change the, you know, educational system if we do it for 90 minutes a week. So this is not something that you have to like, okay, scrap everything I've ever done and I can only do this from now on. No, 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 no. It's a game of degrees, but just get started. Just try it once.
Yeah. Yeah. So, jump in.
Yeah.
The water's fine.
That's right. All right, guys. Well, thanks again. And we'll talk at you some other time.
Well, thanks again for joining us in this great conversation about education. We hope you will not just listen, but participate. Leave us a comment, suggestion, or thought on our website. You just never know when we'll use it on the show. Until next time, pursue joy and learn something.